So I often like to point out the meaning of the word Zen, which is derived from the Sanskrit word dhyana, and probably the one way, or maybe the best way, to define what dhyana is in English, and perhaps this should be the name of our practice rather than Zen, which is imported from Japanese, is the single word absorption. So we could define our practice, we could say this is the Living Dharma Center for Absorption Training, and that would be exactly correct. What we are doing here, this kind of training that we're doing, is really quite unique. When you think of the types of training that we undergo in our everyday life, and those are essential too, I'm not putting it down, but we are trained in our everyday life to change things, to find the most precise, most correct, the most efficient way of changing the forms of the world from one state to another. This is really one of the purposes of education, to learn how to do that. Technology. Whatever it is that you're learning, even if it's the arts, you're learning, for example, if you're studying piano, you're learning how to most effectively, most efficiently, most expressively push keys that create a sound. But this is different. We're not learning to change anything. And yet we bring to this practice the attitude of wanting to change things, because that's all we really know from our life outside of absorption. So what we know from our life outside of absorption is that the world comes in a certain way, and we would prefer to be in a somewhat different way. So we learn techniques to create a world that's different. So naturally, when we come to this practice, we see ourselves in a certain way and we want to change ourselves into another way. So we use this practice to, quote, get enlightened, to become a better person, to become happier. And none of these reasons are invalid or improper. It's just that they're not what this practice is. So this practice starts from a very big-hearted, open-armed embracing and acceptance of the way the world is right now in this moment. We start right there. That is the very core of our practice, you might say, is this embracing. And through this embracing, we begin to notice something that the very forms we are embracing in our life outside of absorption obscure. Because in our life outside of absorption, the form of the world comes as an indicator of something that needs changing or needs maintaining or needs elimination or needs enhancing. But that's the world outside of absorption. Here we take it exactly as it comes. And in doing that, we are looking for something that was previously obscured by the very forms. Obscured because these forms impelled us to take an action, to do something, and then to have a feeling about it. I succeeded, I didn't succeed. How wonderful it is that I can do this, or what a failure I am that I couldn't change it. And all the rest of it, all the things that are part of the human experience. Now, when I talk about it that way, I'm not putting it down. It's just the way it is. And when we come into the Zendo and we do this absorption, Even that side of our life, the side where we get hung up and caught, where things are made important and things are made unimportant, and we get into habit patterns, that's the very world that we are embracing here. That world. It's just a part of this whole one fabric. Why would we exclude that? Why would we exclude the human condition? Why would we exclude feelings that arise from that human condition? Anxiety, elation, depression. Because each of these things, everything, the way it is right now, is inevitable. We already know this. We know that the way the world unfolds is via cause and effect, or what you might call natural law, or perhaps you could call it mathematics. So why would we ever, you know, coming from this place here, this place of absorption, not embrace something that's inevitable? It would be crazy. It'd be like beating your head bloody against a brick wall. There'd be no sense to it. So we start there. So what is the absorption side of it? It's so very simple. The absorption side of it is allowing. And in this allowing, what happens? Dividing lines that were created in the world outside of absorption, the world of map making, the world of decision making, the world of trying to change things or maintain things or get rid of things, those dividing lines start to get very blurred. And then they start to fade away. And what was on one side of the line gets absorbed by what had been on the other side of this former line, and vice versa. So the things that were separate before are absorbed together, like a sponge takes up water and you can't tell where the sponge ends and the wetness begins. The sponge is wet. The sponge is wetness. Now, Dogen presented this in a very elegant and simple way. And it's a very famous quote of Dogen's. And I'll repeat it now, and then we can look into it a little bit from the standpoint of what I've just been talking about. But he said this, he said, using the self to experience the manifold dharmas is ignorance. Using the coming of the manifold dharmas to experience oneself is enlightenment. So, this first statement, using the self to experience the manifold dharmas. Now, manifold dharmas, manifold meaning many, or innumerable in this case. Innumerable dharmas with a small d. A dharma with a small d in Buddhism indicates any element of experience, any so-called object of a mind. It could be anything from a color, a sound, a smell, a feeling, a thought, an event, whatever, doesn't matter. In the world outside of absorption, there's a dividing line between this thing that we call a self and the dharmas, the manifold dharmas that this self believes it is, quote, experiencing. Now, when we say to experience in this realm here, what we are actually saying by the word experience is the dividing line. That's all it is. We don't say, I am incense smell. We say, I experience incense smell. So in the world outside of absorption, Incense smell is experience, meaning I am here, incense smell is there. Something happens in between that makes me aware of it, but I'm here and it's there. I have experienced the incense smell. I have experienced the sound of the car driving down the street. I have experienced the person yelling at me and my reactions to that. So all along, this experience, this sense of experiencing, is what is cementing, promoting, persisting this sense of being outside of that, separate from that. Now, what is that thing that's separate from mm-hmm. the experience, from the Dharma that is being experienced by this separate thing that we call myself or me? What is that? Well, there does seem to be something standing apart because it's different, right? Your body is different than the stick of incense in the incense burner over there. And there are things inside your body called thoughts and feelings, emotions, that don't appear to be of the same substance as that stick of incense there in the incense burner. So it just seems obvious, almost intrinsic, that this is separation. How could there not be? Any rational person would see that immediately, right? But is there a dividing line? Where is the line drawn? Is it at the very edge of your skin? Your skin is not smelling the incense. Maybe it's right at the olfactory bulb, at the upper part of your nasopharynx. And the bulb connects to the brain. So maybe it's right there. So these molecules from the incense stick hit the bulb and then create your awareness of a sense of smell. But how does that happen? At what point in the bulb does that happen? Does the information get transmitted? If we went right there to that interface, there has to be something, some connection, some contact. At that point of contact, where do you draw the dividing line? Now let's just say these molecules emanating from the incense smoke are actually absorbed by the olfactory bulb. They become a part of your body. What happened there? Where do you draw the dividing line? So you can see how you can very, very easily pull the rug out from under the thinking process that maintains this first way of being, which Dogen, in his description, called ignorance. Because you're actually ignoring an obvious fact that you can't find a place to draw the dividing line between what you call yourself and what you call the external world and all its manifold dharmas. So then the second part of what he said goes like this. Using the coming of the manifold dharmas to experience yourself is enlightenment. How's that possible? What are these manifold dharmas? What are they? Yes, they are manifold. They appear in myriad ways. Smells, feelings, sounds, thoughts, events, circumstances, political affiliations, wars, planets, and take every little tiny piece of the entire universe. It's all this stuff, but what is this stuff? What is it made of? What is its substance? Using the coming of the myriad dharmas to experience yourself. And what is that? What is that self? What is that self that isn't in the first sentence? That is the self created behind a dividing line made up by the intellectual mind that is just kind of sleepy and doesn't see things clearly, therefore, quote, ignorant. Is it possible that this self and the myriad dharmas are actually one substance? Well, what would that substance be? And how would you find it? The way that you find it is to go into the center of it. And that is called absorption. You go into the center of the incense smell. The experience of it, the center of that. You ask yourself, what is the substance of it? What is it made of? All these different things. What is their fundamental substance? Now, I often talk about the singularity, which was, I guess you'd call it the theoretical beginning of everything. Earlier this week, I gave a teisho on the statement from the Bible where God said, let there be light, and the profundity of that statement, because there was something before there was light. There was something before there was incense smell. There was something before there was planets. There was something before this Big Bang where everything spread out and is continuing to spread out at an ever-accelerating rate, apparently, according to the scientists. But if we ran the clock back and came back to the place where nothing was spread out, it was all one thing. The ancient Hebrews, without science, understood that there was something before everything appeared. That there was a time before it seem to appear on the outside as myriad manifold dharmas. What was that substance? That substance spread out. It took various forms and appearances, but it was the same substance. It's never changed. Let me read you something. This is the third Oxfording picture. It's a very beautiful, poetic description of what we're talking about right now. So this is a description that's actually found in the Three Pillars of Zen, which is a really wonderful manual of Zen Buddhism, of absorption Buddhism. So, this third ox herding picture, and remember in these pictures, the ox symbolizes the truth, or what you might call the enlightened, with a capital M, mind. So this is the first glimpse of the ox. And I'm going to read it the way it is, but I always feel bad that there is a gender to these words, but we'll just understand he to mean he and she. In it. If he will but listen intently to everyday sounds, we could change this, if he will but intently smell the incense smell, he will come to realization and at that instant see the very source, with a capital S. These six senses are no different from this true source. In every activity, the source is manifestly present, not hidden. It is analogous to the salt in water. So if you put salt in water, what this is indicating is that you can't find that salt separate from the water. It's salt water. So it's analogous to the salt in water or the binder in paint. So paint has a binder that enables it to stick to a wall. Where's the binder? Where does the binder end and the paint begin? There's no paint without binder. When the inner vision is properly focused, one comes to realize that that which is seen is identical with the true source. This is what we're doing. This is Zen, absorption. So, this is proper focusing. It says here, when the inner vision is properly focused, intently focused, intently aware, it starts with embracing. If embracing fades away and we begin to react, meaning hold on to, oh, this experience, I can't let it go. Push away, oh, I'm a failure. I'll never get this Zen thing. Or ignore any of these poisonous ways of utilizing the mind, poisonous in terms of this absorption. We can't properly focus the mind to see this. Now the forms of the world are obscuring it, because we're caught up in them. I love this particular word to describe that. We're enthralled. So we are in a thrall. In a thrall. We are lost in the struggle against, the clinging to. We can't jump in the river and flow with it. So when the inner vision is properly focused, one comes to realize that that which is seen is identical with the true source. And now there's a beautiful poem. A nightingale warbles on a twig. The sun shines on undulating willows. There stands the ox. Where could it hide? That splendid head, those stately horns, what artist could portray them? That's a beautiful last line. What artist could portray them? What Zen teacher could explain it to you in a Teisho? See? Can't be done. You yourself have to enter that world, which is exactly what's happening here. It's the entry of that world. It's not the understanding of that world. That would be an artist trying to portray it. It's for the intellectual mind to make a picture and fit the picture into something it expects to be the solution to the problem. That's not absorption. That's just more of the world outside of absorption, which is a very important world. Nobody who's a true Buddhist would ever put it down. But it isn't this world of absorption. I'm going to read something else from this book, just to help elucidate this a little further without saying too much. So this is a wonderful dialogue. It's actually a Dokusan between Harada Roshi and a student who is working on the Koan move. And I'll read a little bit of this. So this was during a sesshin, and there were already many of the Dokusan between the student and the Roshi depicted in the book. And you see how the student is getting deeper and deeper into the profound question of what is this mu? What is this source? And remember, mu represents this source. You could just simply say, what is the source? Well, what is my true nature? What is the essence of the world? But in order to avoid too much intellectual thinking about it, which you're going to have to go through anyway until you realize it's getting you nowhere, because that's the human condition, and that's part of the process of working on breakthrough koan, is going through this so-called dead end. But remember now, Mu doesn't just represent the source. Mu is the source. So this student is now, and you can see it through the progression of these doksan, more and more entering Mu, entering it. Still not clearly getting it. Still there's a dividing line. There's some separation between this student and Mu. But you can see there's a process happening. So I'll read a little bit of this. So the Roshi says, you look as though you have almost grasped Mu. Watch this electric fan beside me. I turn it on. And he demonstrates. The blades rotate. Where does the rotation come from? Now I shut off the fan. What has happened to the rotation? Isn't that Mu? When I ask students to show me Mu, some seize my baton. Others hold up a finger, and still others embrace me like this. And he embraces the student at that point. And the student said, I know all of that, but if I did it, it would be premeditated, not spontaneous. You can see the place this student is in, trying to grasp this and getting caught by the demonstration. I want to just demonstrate it. I want you to confer upon me awakening. If I just get the right demonstration, but they know too that that's not it. Because they say it would be premeditated. I just can't seem to get there. So the Roshi says, that is true, of course. When you actually experience Mu, you will be able to respond spontaneously. But you must stop reasoning and just engross yourself in Mu, absorb yourself in it. The student said, I understand that too, and I'm trying to do it. I had a taste of Mu the other day, and this is very wonderful. So the student saying to the Roshi, I had a taste of Mu the other day. When I shouted at the monitor for striking me, when there was a sign saying, do not strike, above me. So in the Zendo, you could have a sign put up if you didn't want to be hit by the Kisaku. There was a sign there, but he got struck anyway. And it triggered a spontaneous reaction. His whole being responded. His whole being, meaning the floor, the cushions, the incense, the air in the room, the sun, the gravity, the planets, everything responded. Why did you hit me? Remember, using the coming of the manifold dharmas to experience yourself is enlightenment. So the Roshi said, that feeling of Mu was wonderful, wasn't it? At that moment you shouted at him. There was no duality, no awareness of yourself or him, just the shout. But because that awareness was only partial, it disappeared. Had it been complete, it would have survived. Don't lose your grip on Mu no matter what happens. Strive on. And later on, more deeply into this back and forth, dokusan by dokusan in this sesshin where the student is penetrating ever deeper, getting so close, so close. The Roshi says, you have something to say, haven't you? The student said, yes. The Roshi said, go right ahead. The student said, you told me to ask myself, why can't I just see when I am looking? Why can't I just hear when I am listening? Why can't I understand that when I get hit with your baton and cry, ouch, that ouch is the whole universe? My answer is that I see the baton, for example, as just a baton, limited in aspect and no more. And then the Roshi goes on to describe how the baton is connected to everything else. That he's only seeing the baton separately because he's caught by it. He's engrossed in it, enthralled by it. Doesn't see the entire picture, the entire fabric of cause and effect. So, finally, he says this. The student says to him, "What then is mu? Is it the realization of the undifferentiated, of that that doesn't have dividing lines, where the dividing lines have been absorbed?" The Roshi said, "To realize the undifferentiated is a necessary first step, but the realization is incomplete if it goes no further. After you have seen into your true nature, that is, become enlightened, You see all objects as temporary phenomena undergoing endless change, but you see them in and through the aspect of sameness." Remember this source. "You then understand that without the undifferentiated, there can be no individual existences. I can illustrate what I'm saying." This is going to be the last thing I read from this. "I can illustrate what I'm saying with this paper fan. One side has many stripes, as you see. The other is pure white. The white side can be called the undifferentiated, the side with stripes, the discriminated. What makes the stripes appear stripes is the white, or undifferentiated, side of the fan. Conversely, what makes the white side meaningful is the stripes. They are two aspects of the one. But while a discriminated aspect is subject to ceaseless transformation, that which is undifferentiated is changeless." And then he assigns this to the student, his new way of breaking through. "I want you to contemplate that. That in every aspect of this world coming to you, this actual world, the world that we embrace in Zazen, there is something embedded in it. It's the undifferentiated. It is what you could call the source, meaning that it was there before anything spread out and became this world. What was that? And where would you find it? You yourself are it. Go to the closest place. Don't look at it afar. Go to the place as deep in your center as possible. That's where it is. What is this source? So this is the very crux of our practice, to come to this source. Now this source is manifested by every single thing. It's manifested by the sound of that fan. It's manifested by mu. It's manifested by who. It's manifested by breath. We get there by going into the center of this experience. That is absorption, and that is what Zen is. So we'll end there today.